Scientists aren't the only ones to become ensnared in their work. I have the responsibility for this entire habitat on my shoulders. 10,000 men and women, they all depend on me.
Yes, of course. I should have realized that.
Like you, I have no one to turn to. Everly went on, his voice a soft, poignant murmur.
You need a friend, she said.
That's perfectly true. You are a very understanding woman.
You are very kind.
I'm happy that you believe so.
She decided she had to play her penultimate card. You know, I have admired you for several weeks now. You are so commanding, so superb.
He stopped walking and turned to face her. Jean-Marie's heart thumped in her chest. You really admire me? He asked, his voice high with wonder.
Truly? She lied.
Perhaps, he began, then paused dramatically.
Perhaps.
Taking both her hands in his, Eberly said, Perhaps we could be friends. She allowed him to hold her hands as she gazed into his eyes, trying to fathom what was going on behind them. But you're a married woman, Eberly said gloomily. In a closed habitat like this, it could never work.
If Edouard were busy working on his probe, searching for it, trying to regain control of it,
he'd have no time for you at all, would he?
None at all, she agreed.
But we couldn't be seen together in public, Eberly said gravely. That wouldn't do.
She replied, We could meet here and take walks, talk to each other, share our thoughts.
I suppose I could arrange for an electric cart, and we could ride to one of the end caps or one of the unoccupied villages.
Jean-Marie recognized the danger in that. I could not be away from home for so very long, she temporized.
But if your husband had the satellites he wants, he'd be spending all his time searching for his probe, wouldn't he?
Nodding, she added, And once he found the machine, he would be with it every hour of the night and day.
Eberly smiled. You have a rival.
Yes, I do. He stepped closer and put his hands on her shoulders. And his palm comp chimed.
Jean-Marie shuddered as if rudely awakened from a bad dream. Eberly grumbled something and flicked his handheld open. Yes, he snapped. Chief Administrator Eberly?
He heard from the handheld's tiny speaker. Urbain's voice. Does he know?
Yes, he said more guardedly.
This is Edouard Urbain. I have decided to withdraw my opposition to mining the rings of Saturn.
Urbain's voice was brittle, sharp-edged.
Providing, of course, that you permit my people to launch the satellites into orbit around Titan, and to build replacement satellites.
Glancing at Jean-Marie, who was staring at him with eyes so wide with guilt that he could see their whites even in the nighttime darkness, Eberly answered,
Very well. We can discuss this in my office first thing tomorrow morning.
He snapped the handheld shut and said to Jean-Marie,
It's quite late. You'd better get home.
Was that Edouard? She asked in an agonized tone.
Nodding, Eberly said, He'll be at your apartment shortly, wondering where you've been.
With that, he turned abruptly and began striding back toward Athens, leaving Jean-Marie standing in the shadows alone. Both of them felt relieved.
Pancho did not break the light-speed barrier, but she was knocking at Holly's door before Holly could finish washing the tears from her face. What's the matter? She said as she strode into the apartment, her head swiveling as if she were looking for cutthroats and assassins. Within minutes, the two sisters were sitting together on the sofa as Holly poured out her troubles. "Oh, Ponch, I made such a mess of things." Poncho nodded tightly. "He'll never want to talk to me again. Never."
"Does that matter so much to you?"
"It does. It truly does. I didn't realize how much I really love Raoul until now. It flamed out, Ponch. I've wrecked it all."
Leaning back on the sofa, Poncho scratched idly at her chin. "Cool down, sis. Let's take this one step at a time."
"He thinks all I want is to get him to fly Nadia to the rings. He doesn't know that I really love him."
"Well, to begin with, you've got to find somebody else to pilot the spacecraft. That'll show him that he's not on the spot for that assignment."
"I wish. But even if I could find somebody, he'd still be sore at me. He'll go back to Earth soon as he can, I bet."
"Which won't be real soon," Poncho said as soothingly as she could. "There aren't any ships heading all the way out here that I know of."
"There will be, in a few months."
"That's a long time from now."
"Yeah, maybe.
But what you need, first shot out of the box, is somebody to fly your scientist pal to the rings."
"Timoshenko won't do it," Holly said. "And we don't really have anybody else except Raoul who can do the job. We need an experienced astronaut."
Grinning widely, Poncho said, "You're looking at one."
"You?
But Jake said..." "Never mind what Jake said. I spent more time driving spacecraft than you've spent brushing your teeth, just about."
"But that was years ago, Ponch."
"You're too old." Poncho's face hardened. "Don't say it, kid. My reflexes are still quick enough to give you a spanking. A little time in a simulator, and I'll be sharp as a samurai sword edge."
Holly sat there, mouth open, clearly disbelieving.
"Jake can help your mission control team. He gets along pretty good with Manny Gaeta,
I suppose.
And you can get your boyfriend to join the techie team, too. He can stay nice and safe here while I fly out to the rings. This is going to be fun."
"Poncho," said Holly, shaking her head, "you can't..."
"The hell I can't."
"But Raoul won't join the mission control team. He won't even talk to me."
"Sure he will," Poncho said cheerfully. "Ask him while you're in bed."
"I couldn't."
"Best time to ask a man anything," Poncho said with a knowing wink.
16 January 2096, Registration Day. Eberly awoke with a smile. Registration day. The moment that my re-election campaign actually begins. Sitting up in his bed, he mentally scanned his political horizon. No obstacles in sight. Urbane has caved into me, so there will be no real opposition to my plan to mine the rings. As he got up and padded to the lavatory, he thought, of course, that Wonderly Woman will object and try to get the IAA to intervene, but that will just make me look more heroic to the voters, resisting the demands of earthbound bureaucrats who don't care about our real needs. Maybe I'll get elected unanimously. Best of all, he told himself, as he thoroughly brushed his teeth, I won't have to play games with Urbane's wife. What a pathetic little game she tried to play with me. Would she really have gone to bed with me? He shook his head as he rinsed his mouth and spat into the sink. I can have my pick of just about any woman in this habitat, he said to himself. But why bother? Power is better than sex. Being admired by everyone. Everyone. That's the really great thing in life. I don't need women. I don't need anything or anyone. Not as long as I'm chief administrator. No one can hurt me. No one can touch me. I'm king of the hill, and I'm not going to let anyone pull me down.
Zeke Berkowitz was smiling amiably as he inspected the camera placements he had personally set up around the stage of Athens' only theater. As chief of Goddard's communications department, Berkowitz still thought of himself as a newsman, and this day of registering for the coming election was one of those rare newsworthy events in the habitat. Despite his slightly portly shape, Berkowitz cut a rather dapper figure in his pale yellow slacks and raw silk sports coat of toast brown. He had none of his minuscule staff with him. He figured he could handle this event alone with the help of the three remotely controlled cameras he had set in place. Unlike most of the younger people in the habitat, Berkowitz had disdained the end.